Mahaprabhu's final pastimes is described in the best possible manner in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There is no other book which is more detailed than Chaitanya Charitamrita as far as the final pastimes are concerned, particularly the 18 years of time Mahaprabhu spent in Jagannath Puri and the activities associated with Jagannath Puri. So Chaitanya Charitamrita gives a very good description of the final pastimes or the Andalila of Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. Actually, it is very difficult to discuss all the final pastimes in an hour and a half, because it is something which is very unlimited, and to bring it into a limited time is very difficult. But at the same time, it will also be not appropriate not discussing Mahaprabhu's final pastimes, particularly in the wake of Mahaprabhu's appearance day, Gaur Purnima coming closer. Anyway, in this Antilila, Mahaprabhu, after arriving back in Jagannath Puri, what we find there is that many of the Lord's very close associates and had their interactions with Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu's discussions with some great personalities on the process of devotional science or the Krishna consciousness, process of Krishna consciousness. And you will find here that people from different sides of Vedic tradition have come in to discuss matters with Mahaprabhu at this time. And sometimes when we listen to the discussions of Mahaprabhu and some of the personalities whom Mahaprabhu discussed Krishna consciousness, we may tend to think that Mahaprabhu was trying to establish something which is beyond, is not completely covered in the Vedic literature. For example, it runs to Prakashananda Saraswati's discussions in Banaras, discussions with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and others, makes us to think a little bit more deeper about the vast side of the Vedic traditions or the Vedic the philosophy. It is quite possible that when we discuss things, we also come to jump into false conclusions about others whom Mahaprabhu has discussed and made them realize the glories of devotion, the glories of bhakti. But that does not mean that they were in any way had or criticized by Mahaprabhu for following that particular process. Mahaprabhu was trying to establish the process of Krishna consciousness, which is the essence of all the Vedic literature, particularly with reference to the ordinary people of this world. So we will see here that in the in the time he spent in this 18 years time, Mahaprabhu elevated people who come from such difficult conditions, and depending on the social conditions which were prevalent at that time, he acted in response to that. That the association of the Avedic, or which was against the Vedic tradition, that has been getting stronger. And the result was that it was affecting the people whose life was very much trained in the Vedic tradition. And you will see there that Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, the two personalities who were associating with the Khasis and the Nawab Hussain Shah at that time, has virtually changed their lifestyle to such a degree that when Mahaprabhu first saw them, even Mahaprabhu's associates took them as not belonging to the Vedic tradition. In such a way, they were shocked to see them in that condition. But because Krishna himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, he was able to identify who they were in their original position. And that intimate discussions with Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami gives us a lot more understanding. There's so many things in Antalila which makes us to realize the traditions the principles behind it, and also Mahaprabhu's strong commitment to the Vedic system of life, the Vedic way of life. So earlier you will notice there that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had had his dealings with the king of Orissa. At that time it was Pradabharudra Maharaj. So the king Pradabharudra and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, two personalities. And how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with Pradabharudra is a lesson for all time. Because normally in the modern world, particularly, people look for recognition. Everyone wants recognition from the authorities, especially when it comes from the government. It makes life a lot easier in this world. Because of that, the religious processes, the religious principles also gets affected by that. In the Vedic system, the tradition always and will always be that those who have taken to the process of renunciation of the sannyasa ashram, they are beyond the laws of this world. It does not affect them anymore. They are not subjected to the formalities and etiquette of this world. It doesn't affect them because they have, for them, the whole material world is their family. And they have no individual attachment to any particular land or particular place or particular king or the government. They have no responsibility towards them. But Pradabharudra's case, this was what it was showing to us. King Pradabharudra, in the earlier days, he wanted to associate with Mahaprabhu very closely. He had a strong desire because he was a great devotee of Krishna. And being a devotee and seeing Mahaprabhu's position in the society, the king had a strong desire to associate with Mahaprabhu. But you will notice there that many, many devotees were recommending to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept Pradabharudra as to have a close relationship, but Mahaprabhu always rejected that. He has always rejected that. And that is the standard of the Vedic tradition. That is how it is. That no matter who it is, for a sannyasi to come back to associate with people who are engaged in activities in this material world, they have already transcended that. So for them to come back here and to associate with the authorities in the government, and or even for popularity's sake, associating with any great person in this world is forbidden. For this reason, it is forbidden. Because as a sannyasi's position, when we take the sannyasa ashram, these are the commitments we make to the Supreme Lord, that our business in this world is finished. That is why sannyasam, in other words, it's also called a death. It's a kind of a death in this own world before the body drops off. So that is why it is important that Pradabharudra wanted to see Mahaprabhu. And the first person who tried to influence Mahaprabhu was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's point was that King was a great devotee. And he was so humble, and at the same time he wanted to associate with Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu at that point told Sarvabhauma that, "I hope you understand what is the position of a sannyasi in this world." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was so well learned, and who was a householder at that time, was actually moved by the commitment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to sannyasa ashram. Because if the great souls, if they don't act properly, what chances the ordinary people have to stick to that position? So just to teach them a lesson, Mahaprabhu stuck to that position. He said, "Under no circumstances I will see king here, and I will not like to welcome him to my association. Because for me, I have taken to the sannyasa ashram. And as a sannyasi, my commitment is only to Supreme Lord and nobody else. And that commitment is seeing Krishna in every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna and serving them. Because Mahaprabhu has come to establish the Vedic tradition, he had to act in a particular form, particular way." So many times Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya recommended Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to accept the king as into his association, but Mahaprabhu constantly rejected. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya did not have a lot of good news for King Pradabharudra. So he went back and reported to the king that if you patiently wait, sometime Mahaprabhu will change his mind. So till that time, we will not raise this issue again. And when a good opportunity comes, maybe Mahaprabhu is merciful. He is merciful to so many people in this world. He has given Krishna consciousness, love of Godhead to so many people. How come that he will not show that mercy on you? But that will also one day happen. So this is the way Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya reported back to King Pratapadrudra. Later on, after some time, Ramananda Roy resigned from the service, government service. So while resigning, Pratapadrudra asked Ramananda Roy the reason for leaving the government service. And Ramananda Roy told Pratapadrudra his intention of leaving the service, going to Jagannath Puri and living in the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This was his desire to do that. So while going for that, Pratapadrudra felt very uneasy in the sense that on the one hand, he felt happy that Ramananda Roy at least has got that opportunity to go. I am still stuck in this prince king king's position. And I am still unable to see Mahaprabhu at any time. And he is not giving me any opportunity. So let me at least try to speak to Mahaprabhu through Ramananda Roy. So at that point, Pratapadrudra asked Ramananda Roy to speak to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and to accept him as a close associate. And Ramananda Roy, when he came to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we find there that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initially welcomed Ramananda Roy's association with him. But when he brought up this issue of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of Pratapadrudra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately withdrew himself from that. He did not want to have any connection there with the king. So Ramananda Roy could fully understand why Mahaprabhu has spoken that way, that he was not willing to give an audience to the king, simply for one reason, that a sannyasi, when he associates with people in this world who are holding important positions, there is a possibility that the normal people will speak about the sannyasa ashram. They will see sannyasa ashram also in a wrong way. And that will always happen. That is the way the human society is. That sannyasa ashram's credibility is, as long as the vairagyam or renunciation, what they have taken a vow for, if that's not maintained, that sannyasa ashram has no meaning. Although in so many excuses we could make, that this is the reason why I have broken this principle, or that reason I have done this. There's so many things you can find in this world, or whatever you call dovetailing this or dovetailing that. But at the end of the day, the basic principles of sannyasa ashram has to be maintained. And Mahaprabhu wanted to stress this point very, very strongly, that he told Ramananda Roy, there is no chance of me seeing the king or talking to him. So Ramananda Roy came back and told the king exactly what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said to him. So the king was very disappointed, but at the same time he was praying to Mahaprabhu that one day he gives him the opportunity to see and receive his mercy. So this carried on for quite a long time, and it did not all happen in one day. It was over a period of time all this interaction between king and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened. Later on you find there that apart from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy, Lord Nityananda came to talk to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the same recommendations as others have done. Lord Nityananda spoke to Mahaprabhu and told him that what a nice devotee the king is. And if you reject the king, it will be very much upset and he will be very hurt by that and even go to the extent of giving up his body. To such a situation it has happened. Mahaprabhu was in no mood to make any compromise on that. He still said to him, if this is the way you are all talking to me, I'm going to leave this place and go. This is a warning he gave to them. So from this you can see that strictly adhering to the principles of Vedic system, that a sannyasi ashram, sannyasa ashram is the topmost ashram in the, no doubt about it, that it is the highest position in the Varnashrama Dharma. And if a sannyasi does not act properly, the remaining, the people who are in the lower cadre, will automatically find fault in their dealings with the sannyasi. Mahaprabhu wanted to avoid that, any criticism of Varnashrama Dharma. Varnashrama Dharma is Krishna's creation. And sannyasa ashram is discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam in detail, the glories of sannyasa ashram and the standard required in the sannyasa ashram. So in that way, this discussion went on. Lord Nityananda eventually told Mahaprabhu that if it is impossible to give an audience to the king, at least send him one of your dhotis as a prasadam to him and let him be satisfied with that. So a cloth was folded up, nicely packed, and gone and delivered to, given to the king. King was very satisfied with that. And then again, the king still felt very strongly that somehow or the other, before anything happens, I should get the mercy from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So eventually it was decided, on recommendation from Surup Damodar, who was the close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that the son of the king, who is a prince, he could come and see on behalf of the father, because he was not holding any position. He could come and see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that was agreed at the end. So the prince came to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately embraced him. And as soon as Mahaprabhu embraced him, Krishna consciousness in him started working straight away. Mahaprabhu started dancing along with this prince. Together they were chanting and dancing for quite a while. And Mahaprabhu enjoyed the little boy's association so much. And the boy felt ecstatic because of the embrace he received from Mahaprabhu. That when the boy went back home later on, while he was leaving, Mahaprabhu told him he should come again, and he had no objection in accepting him. From this what it shows is that Mahaprabhu had no difficulty in dealing with anybody, and had no objection to that. But as long as one is in the sannyasa ashram, one has to uphold the principles of sannyasa ashram. Otherwise, it will create disturbance, and all the great personalities will strictly follow the rules and regulations. Mahaprabhu never liked anybody transgressing the rules, what has already been set up by the previous authorities. That is why Krishna says, Sayat Pramanam Kurude Logastadanu Vartade. That has to follow, that cannot change, because if you change that, then everything will collapse. People will start making concessions and start taking exceptions and everything, and then eventually everything will become very distorted. So destroying something is not as bad, but distorting something is worse. So that was Mahaprabhu's concept about it, that he doesn't want anything to be distorted. He wanted to maintain the strictly the principles of sannyasa ashram. So later on what you find is that this carried on for a few years, and for one particular year, for the Jagannath Puri festival, Rath Yatra festival, almost 200 devotees came from Bengal. And they were led by Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya came with quite a few devotees together with the blessings of Mahaprabhu's mother, Shachi Devi, and Vishnupriya. They all gave so much presents to be given to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu was willing to welcome them. So when all these 200 devotees arrived in Jagannath Puri, there was a very, very big festival before the Puri Rath Yatra. And they have divided themselves into 7 or 8 teams with one lead singer, and there is one lead dancer in each group. You find a description of that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, very nicely described. And a few teams in the front, few teams in the back and on the sides, that the chariot was moving. So Mahaprabhu at that time experienced tremendous ecstasy in that Rath Yatra. And the king was also there, sweeping the ground in front of the chariot, as it was the king's duty as a servant of Krishna to do that. So he was accordingly acting that way. And he had seen Mahaprabhu, but he had no opportunity to get any audience with him. So it was like that, the Rath Yatra festival finished. So after the Rath Yatra festival was over, all the devotees were fully tired after the... Tired means they were felt the tremendous blissful experiences they had in chanting and dancing in the association of all these great devotees of Krishna, and the holy name totally vibrating from Mahaprabhu's Mahaprabhu's lotus face, and also from Advaita Acharya and others, who had put a lot of energy into that particular Rath Yatra. So when that was all over, they got an opportunity that they were all resting in one place. It was then that they thought Ramananda Roy, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Nityananda, they made a plan that the king could go now, and Mahaprabhu was in a transcendental mood. He was resting at that time. So king was advised to go there in ordinary clothes, not dressed like a king, but as an ordinary person, and go and serve Mahaprabhu. So he's given that opportunity. So he went there, and the king went there and started massaging the legs of Mahaprabhu's legs. So when he was massaging the legs, Mahaprabhu didn't notice who was doing that, because he was already in a consciousness which was outside this world. That is, it is sometimes difficult to understand what does this mean, consciousness outside this world. Our consciousness is bound by the conditions of this world. We do not understand anything else, what goes on outside this world, because we have no transcendental realizations. Our realizations are all within this small planet. What we experience in our day-to-day life, which is what we are repeatedly chewing the chewed again and again. But those great devotees, particularly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is known as Lokabahya. Lokabahya means one who is outside this world. He doesn't belong to this world. And this state of consciousness happens to devotees who have reached such a high degree of Krishna consciousness. They are not anymore bound by the laws of this material world. They, although they are physically present here, their consciousness is already gone to such a level of association with the Supreme Lord that they cannot even identify their position in this material world. They are so much in association with the transcendental world. So Mahaprabhu was always falling into that consciousness. And in that consciousness, Loka Bahya Chareyam, that great devotees pray like this, we would like to travel. In the Bhagavatam you will find so many personalities in that consciousness. Maharaj Rishabhadev, when he walked out from his kingdom, he was walking without any clothes on his body. And people started calling him as a mad person. And they were thinking that he has probably lost all his control. But in reality, Rishabhadev's consciousness was such that he has gone beyond this world. He is not limited anymore by this conditioned world. So same thing happens to Mahaprabhu also. In that mood he was sitting down there. So the king was massaging his legs, and at the same time Surab Damodar told him to recite some nice verses for that Mahaprabhu will enjoy them. And the king was a good singer, so therefore he started singing the famous verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam, known as the Gobiya Gidam. This Gobiya Gidam, almost 19 verses, they were spoken by different gopis at the same time. One gopi after another, they recited. That is how it is understood. Sri Shivan says in the Srimad Bhagavatam while speaking to Parikshit Maharaj, that after the gopis and Srimati Radharani lost association of Krishna, and they were searching for Krishna, and eventually they decided there is no more point in searching after him. They came to that conclusion very strongly. And it is then that they have started crying. For actually, it is not right to call Gobiya Gidam. It was actually Gobiya Rodanam. They were crying for Krishna. It was more of a cry than a song. And in that verses, all the gopis, one after the other, spoke about Krishna, about their relationship with Krishna. Jayadide digam janmano vraja Shraidamindira Shashwadatrahi Daida Drishyadam Dichudavaga Tuidada Savastuam Vijinvade Sharadudashaye Sadhu Jadasal Sarasi Jodaya Shri Musha Drishaha Swaradamatha De Shulkada Siga Varadanignadoneha Kimvata. That king was reciting these verses, and Mahaprabhu was enjoying these verses to very, very high degree, because this is exactly what Mahaprabhu's mood was. Mahaprabhu was enjoying these verses so much that he was completely lost in ecstasy. And that is how Mahaprabhu was. Surab Damodar and others were also relishing these verses which were recited by King Pradavaritra. So, when it came to the verses related to Tavakathamradam Dapta Jeevanam Kavibhiri Idinam Kalmashavaham Shravanamangalam Srimadadadam Uviganandiye Bhuri Jadanam, when that verse was recited, Mahaprabhu woke up from that and started looking at the person who was singing that. And Mahaprabhu could not understand who it was. So he asked him and embraced him and asked him that, who are you? He said to him, I'm just one of your servants. He said, but he never revealed his identity. The king never revealed his identity to the king never revealed his identity to Mahaprabhu at that time, frightened that Mahaprabhu may sometimes say something about it. In that fear, he didn't reveal his identity. But it was later on that others mentioned to the king, that others mentioned to Mahaprabhu after the king left, that he got what he wanted. He wanted to see the mercy from Mahaprabhu, which he got. And now he was able to go home, and other associates of Mahaprabhu revealed unto him who has come and sung these verses. Mahaprabhu was very pleased with him. And later on we find that Mahaprabhu accepted certain facilities offered by the king while travelling to Vrindavan. That is how we find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about the Mahaprabhu's dealings with the king. But by and large, Mahaprabhu always maintained that distance from the king in all circumstances. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Nilila, there are so many topics discussed. Different devotees, their different relationships with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you will notice there that one of the topmost subjects, what is discussed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is Mahaprabhu's visit to Benares. Benares was considered at that time the center of learning. It has always been like that. Even to today, even up to this point, you can say that the scholars, most of the scholars in the Vedic tradition, they assemble in Benares. And that is why you will notice that all the acharyas go to Benares to discuss their philosophy, and they all have their own facilities also there. Different traditions have their own facilities. And in addition to that, Sridharacharya Swamiji, who wrote his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhavartha Divya, that was written in Benares, in the Bindumadhava temple. So from time immemorial, Benares or Kashi or Varanasi, whatever it's called today, was a place of learning, and all the scholars and the spiritually advanced souls, they assembled in Benares for mutual association. They did that from time immemorial. It was like that. Even in the Bhagavatam, there is a reference to Benares when Akura left Dwaraka. He went to Benares to take shelter, and the king of Kashi gave him shelter there, and he lived as a sannyasi there for 12 years in Benares before Krishna brought him back to Dwaraka again. So you can see all these things have happened in Benares. So in Benares, so many great scholars have assembled, and it was in Benares that Mahaprabhu had his discussion with Prakashananda Saraswati. Now, there is a lot of things to talk about Prakashananda Saraswati. Prakashananda Saraswati at that time was the head of the monis or the impersonalist sannyasis who were present there. Now, they follow a different process. Their process is Jnanamargam. They cultivate spiritual knowledge through the process what Shankaracharya has given to them. That was their system of developing spiritual knowledge. So, this group of sannyasis, Prakashananda Saraswati and others, and the members of this group, had a very strong influence in Benares. Sometimes when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, many people get the impression that Mahaprabhu just went there one day, had a meeting with them, and immediately Prakashananda Saraswati became a devotee. It didn't happen like that. Actually, when it comes to changing people who are elevated like Prakashananda Saraswati, it takes a long time for them to change. But there is another good thing to that. When they change properly. Unlike us, when we change one day, the next day we change back again. But for them, it was a different. Why? Because the Jnana Margam is like that. The process of knowledge, those who have come to the process of spiritual life through the Jnana Margam, they have cultivated knowledge to such a degree that at some point in time, along with the mood of goodness and the knowledge they have developed together, works on them in such a way that they have completely transcended or gone beyond this material consciousness. In other words, as much as one gets free oneself from the bodily concept of life, and as much as one is enjoying that spiritual knowledge, what one has acquired in the mood of goodness, immediately that knowledge will change that person's attitude in life. In other words, the realizations what the jnanis receive is something very, very strong, and it is not that something which you can ignore it. And there were not people, Prakashananda Saraswati and the associates of Prakashananda Saraswati were on that platform. Krishna also confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that nādatte kashyajilpāvam, that that the what ajñāna enāvṛtam jñānam, that ajñānam, ignorance is covering us in the form, it's a veil, it's covering our original consciousness. Ajñāna enāvṛtam jñānam, that tena mohyanti jandava, that it is actually covering our original knowledge in us. And that when you start breaking away that coverage and the real consciousness is building up inside, automatically you are bound to act in a spiritually strong way. And that is their position was. Most of them were elevated through their understanding. They have studied the Shastra very well, especially studying the Vedanta Sutra and literature and all the Upanishads. They could not be ordinary people. They had a very high degree of realization of this on the spiritual level. On the other hand, not only that they had these high realizations, in addition to that, they were practicing it in such a way, all the austerities and penances, what one should perform in sannyasa ashram, they were strictly adhering to that. So with all these things behind, Prakashananda Saraswati and the men who were with him, they have developed a style of life and they have developed a straight level of consciousness, which means that they were actually enjoying that type of life, that in the advanced spiritual state. In other words, a lot of realizations had been there to them, and they also had the knowledge associated with that in the mode of goodness. So you can imagine, those personalities who have developed that kind of realizations, it is not possible to turn them off in one day, in one meeting. Everything is possible, but Mahaprabhu's approach was, when he traveled to Vrindavanam first time, he did not want to meet them. He did not want to meet these sannyasis there. Although he knew that they were all there in Benares, discussing the great literature what Vedavyasa Maharshi has presented to this world, and that is their system. So Mahaprabhu, while going to Vrindavanam, it was told by Tapana Mishra, a Brahmana whom Mahaprabhu had sent there before from East Bengal at that time, and also a Maharashtriya Brahmana, Chandrasekhar, who were living there. They requested Mahaprabhu many times that he should visit Prakashananda Saraswati and have a discussion with him. These two personalities, Chandrasekhar and Tapana Mishra, they were very much attracted by Mahaprabhu's process of chanting the holy name. And why? Chitta dratamradei vichindya bahubhi siddhyandi janmandarehi. That this devotional process, Krishna consciousness, will work for people who already have a melting heart, who have that feeling for the personality of Godhead. And they have, by nature, these both Brahmanas had obtained that from Mahaprabhu's mercy. So they were enjoying Mahaprabhu's instruction and the lifestyle of a devotee they already had. So these two Brahmanas requested Mahaprabhu to associate with, to come and speak to Prakashananda Saraswati. Because in Benares, at that time, Prakashananda Saraswati and his group were actually virtually controlling the whole religious life there. And they were the authorities there. and they had the knowledge associated with their renunciation, associated with their detachment. So they were respected by the other members in the society, and they have established themselves very strongly in Benares. So Mahaprabhu decided not to visit them at that time, but on the way back, by now Mahaprabhu has been preaching Krishna consciousness throughout India for quite a while, and many people were attracted to this process of chanting the holy name. So when they were attracted by like this, slowly this news came to the sannyasis in Benares also. They came to know about it. Prakashananda Saraswati and others came to know about this, that there is a sannyasi who also belonged to our tradition, because Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas from Shankaracharya's tradition. And normally in Shankaracharya's traditions, they have different titles given to them depending on the from which institution they have taken sannyasam. So for example, Saraswati is one title, Puri is another title, Bharati is another title. But generally it is considered that Saraswati is on a higher platform, and normally only those who are very accomplished, very advanced and very realized are given this title Saraswati. So Mahaprabhu somehow took the initiation to sannyasa ashram from a personality called Keshava Bharati, who was a sannyasi in the Shankaracharya's tradition. So because he took the sannyasa ashram from Keshava Bharati, Keshava Bharati automatically gave him the title as Bharati to Mahaprabhu also. So he was a sannyasi in the Bharati tradition in the Shankaracharya Sampradaya. So when he came to Benares, what has happened was that the other sannyasis in the same tradition, in the Shankaracharya Sampradaya, they came to know that this sannyasi was taken as an initiation from the Bharati tradition. It's not acting properly. In other words, normally sannyasis are supposed to study Vedanta Sutra, particularly the Shankaracharya's commentary known as Sharirika Bhashyam. Sharirika Bhashyam is a very well-known commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And they study this book, and they discusses all kinds of topics in that related to the movement of the soul, karma, all these very complicated issues are discussed in length there. And Brahma Sutra, which is also known as Vedanta Sutra, is the key book they follow and study very thoroughly. In addition to that, they also refer to all the major Upanishads in their studies. So these things were going on, and Mahaprabhu had no time to study all these books. Mahaprabhu was interested in chanting, dancing and feasting. This was Mahaprabhu's process. So they came to know that more and more people, ordinary people, are attracted to Mahaprabhu, rather than they were not coming to see Prakashananda Saraswati. And Prakashananda Saraswati could not relate with these ordinary people either, because he was in such a position and the ordinary people were far away for him to deal with them. So Mahaprabhu became so popular that Prakashananda Saraswati wanted to see him and discuss with him, what is this process, what you have started now. So it was in this background that one day Tabana Mishra and Chandrasekhar requested Prakashananda Saraswati to come for a prasadam at home, invited all these sannyasis, and Ventura Mahaprabhu was on his way back, and he was also present for this particular ceremony. So when on that particular day Prakashananda Saraswati was, obviously he was given a lot of respect because of his high position in the among the circles, and all the so many junior sannyasis with him whom he was guiding them, and whom he was already training them up and directing them, they were all with him. And when the meeting happened, Mahaprabhu entered that room and he sat in one corner without being noticed by anybody. But it was difficult to cover up Mahaprabhu's personality. Mahaprabhu by nature itself, if Krishna himself dressed up in another form, that altogether everyone looked at him and they could see that this is some personality who is not normally belongs to this world. So everybody wanted to talk to him and find out who is this young sannyasi who had such a degree of renunciation and who has decided to take sannyas at such an early age in life. And they wanted to ask him and find out from him. So they invited him to come and associate with them. Mahaprabhu was not interested. Mahaprabhu didn't want to hear anything about it. He was more interested in chanting the holy name of Supreme Lord, Krishna's holy name, and wanted to engage them, if possible, in the same process. But the meeting went on, and in that meeting, Pranahananda Saraswati asked Mahaprabhu quite a few questions. It is mentioned there that Pranahananda Saraswati asked Mahaprabhu, normally it is the duty of a sannyasi to study Vedanta Sutra, Brahma Sutra, and from that also discuss the nature of the transformation of the soul into the different conditions and associated activities of karma, the modes of nature, so many things in the Vedanta Sutra. You can discuss and practice that also, but instead of doing all that, you are simply engaged in chanting the holy name of Krishna. Prakashananda Saraswati did not have any hate towards the holy name. You must recognize that. He hasn't had any objection to holy name. But in his realization, he considered chanting the holy name as the process as not a very effective process as much as the process laid out by Shankaracharya. That was his position. So he thought that as a sannyasi, sannyasi means who is advanced in knowledge, advanced in renunciation, everything. And if he is acting like this, it may not be very proper. This was Prakashananda Saraswati's position. But Mahaprabhu at that point told him that this is what my spiritual master has instructed me to do, and I will continue to do this because I am not capable of learning anything more than this. He took such an approach towards Prakashananda Saraswati. Prakashananda Saraswati knew that Mahaprabhu was not an ordinary person. He knew Mahaprabhu is somebody whom he does not know who it is, but he knew that Mahaprabhu is not an ordinary sannyasi like anybody else in knowledge or in renunciation. So these things happened, Mahaprabhu left and went back without anything happening after that. That discussion happened and Mahaprabhu left. Prakashananda Saraswati started thinking. At least he managed to get this thought across his mind. In that discussion, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was told by Prakashananda Saraswati, is there anything higher than Brahman? Discussing the impersonal realizations of Brahman realization was discussed there. But that time Mahaprabhu pointed out to him, Vedavyasa Maharshi in the Vedanta Sutra not only talks about Brahman, but through his commentary on the Vedanta Sutra known as Shrimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Maharshi presented the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, to this world. And when he said that, and that attributes, all the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead attracts people towards him. That is what brings people towards Krishna. And when Mahaprabhu said that, because there was a little bit of, there was high knowledge, higher level of knowledge in Prakashananda Saraswati at the same time, due to this association with Mahaprabhu, slowly the devotion started building up inside. So when Mahaprabhu left, Prakashananda Saraswati was in a thoughtful mood about what Mahaprabhu has spoken to him. So initial changes happened in this way. But still he was not able to give up his old convictions or old realizations. That how come that surrendering to Krishna or surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and chanting the holy name of Krishna and taking prasadam offered to Krishna and also associating with devotees could be a better process than the process what he was following? Why did Vedavyasa Maharshi bring this Vedanta Sutra to this world? So he was a bit, mind was a little bit affected by that. After Mahaprabhu went back to Jagannath Puri, one day, one of the Brahmanas were going back to Jagannath Puri, so he wrote a verse and sent it to him. His feeling on the whole discussion, he summarized in one verse and sent that by this messenger to Mahaprabhu. That is what he did. First thing what he did was, he wrote down, they are all scholars, so they could write in verses everything, so nobody could change it. That's the advantage of writing in verses. If you write in the in the prose, automatically you can start interpreting to like the 1441 resolution. It gets changed all the time. Everybody is giving different interpretations. But if it is in the verse form, it doesn't change. It stays as it is, intact. And this is one of the reasons why all the literature, Vedic literature, are combined in the verse form, so that nobody gets, it is not easy to change it. Even then people tried to change it. But still, it was possible not to change it, and therefore the normal mode of communication was writing the verses and sending it to them. So Mahaprabhu sent one verse and sent it to him, and the verse he sent to him was, it's also very meaningful verse.
Yatraste mani karniga malahari swardhirghiga dirghiga tattvam taragam ratnam taragamokshadam madatanu shambhum swayam yachadi edatvalbhudameva yal suragura nirvana margasthida mudho anyatra marichiga supashuval pratyashaya dhavati.
This was a verse he compiled and handed over to one of the brahmanas who were going to see Mahaprabhu. So in that verse, what he mentioned was that
Yatraste Manigarniga Malahari,
that Manigarniga Ghat in Banaras is the place to live. That is the place one should be living.
Tiratnam Taraga Mokshadam Vadadano Shambhu Swayam Yachadi.
The popular understanding, or also in the among the great authorities in the Vedic tradition, is if you give up your body in Banaras, at the time of leaving the body, Lord Shiva will come personally and recite the holy name of Lord Ramchandra in your ears. That is known as Taraga Mantra. So this is the reason in the olden days, many devotees of Lord Ramchandra, Lord Shiva also, all will go to Banaras to leave the body there. So when he went to Banaras, Prakashananda Saraswati is saying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, should one not live in Banaras and take this opportunity? Because if you give up your body in Banaras, it is understood that Lord Shiva himself, at the time of leaving the body, will recite the holy name of Lord Ramchandra in your ears, and you can depart from this world in the spiritual and go into a better destination, liberated from this material world. So that is what he was mentioning here.
Iratnam taraga mokshadam vadadano shambhu swayam yachari edatvalbhudam eva yal suravira nirvana margasthidha mudhonyatra marichika supashuval pratyashaya dhavati.
That it is very surprising, he said, that you have got an opportunity to live in Banaras, but instead of living in Banaras, just like a cow wandering around without any goal or direction, you are wandering around the whole places, and like a pashu, he says, pratyashaya dhavari, that you don't know what you have to do, and this is your situation. This is what Prakashananda Saraswati felt in the beginning about it. So he put this verse and packed it nicely and handed it over to one of the brahmanas who were visiting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So when the brahmana took the message there, Mahaprabhu never received anything directly. Everything was scrutinized by Swarup Damodar. That was the system. Who was Swarup Damodar? Swarup Damodar was a devotee whose original name was Purushottama Acharya. So Purushottama Acharya, at one point in time in his life, he went to Banaras, just like so many other people, went to Banaras, took initiation from a sannyasi there. But after some time, because he was a devotee, he was finding it difficult to adjust with that study of Vedanta to the degree what the sannyasis were doing there. His heart was running after Krishna consciousness. He wanted to develop that Krishna consciousness. It was difficult to separate that from his mind. So he felt very much in crisis in Banaras. And he was also attached to Mahaprabhu very much. Mahaprabhu's earlier days, you will see, Purushottama Acharya was a close associate. But when Mahaprabhu went traveling to different holy places, he lost that opportunity to associate with him. And he was a very quiet person who always kept to himself in a very confidential lifestyle. And always got the complete confidence from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Mahaprabhu loved his association when he came from Banaras and joined Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. That's how it happened. So when Purushottama Acharya, who got initiated as Damodar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu added to the name Swarup and he became Swarup Damodar. So Swarup Damodar came to Mahaprabhu and he was more or less like Mahaprabhu's closest associate. Mahaprabhu trusted him so much that he knew that Swarup Damodar understood Mahaprabhu's mind very well. That therefore anybody who came to see Mahaprabhu or brought anything in writing, it has to be screened first by Swarup Damodar. So this verse was brought by this Brahmana and Swarup Damodar took that verse and read it. When he read it, he became very furious. He couldn't tolerate this. This is such an offense to Mahaprabhu. That somebody is telling, Prakashananda Saraswati is speaking like this to Krishna himself in this way. What kind of spiritual life is he having? This is what went through his mind straight away. So anyway, immediate reaction was, Swarup Damodar decided to show the verse to Mahaprabhu and ask him, what reply should I send for this communication from Prakashananda Saraswati. When Mahaprabhu read the verse, he didn't say anything about it. He only told Swarup Damodar that there is nothing to say about this verse because after all Prakashananda Saraswati is also an elevated soul. Spiritually he is an advanced person. But at the same time for me, he said that without Krishna what is life? That was Mahaprabhu's point. That what spiritual life have you got without Krishna? And I think he has not come to that understanding yet. So like this he replied then. But he didn't say anything, whether to send a reply or not to send a reply. He didn't give any instruction to Swarup Damodar at that time. So Swarup Damodar contemplated on this, thought about this for a few days, and then decided to reply that in another word. Swarup Damodar was also not an ordinary personality, very learned scholar. So he would not give up easily. He decided to answer the same thing in a beautiful way. He replied that. And that was the next verse. In that verse he says there, that Garmambho Manikarniga Bhagavada Padambhu Bhagiradi Kashinam Padirardhameva Bhagade Sri Vishwanatha Swayam Edasteva Hinama Shambhunagare Nistaragam Taragam Tasmal Krishna Padambhujam Bhajasake Sri Padanurvanadam. This was the reply for that verse from Swarup Damodar. In that verse, and essentially, Swarup Damodar is saying to Prakashananda Saraswati that it's all fine what you spoke about Banaras and living in Banaras and discussing there with the sannyasis and all that. But after all, what is Banaras, he said. Banaras has become Banaras because Bhagirathi has come there. Who? Ganges. Ganganadi has come through Banaras. That's what made Banaras. And then what is Ganga? Ganga is actually the water that has washed the feet of the Supreme Lord. That is what's Ganga. So that Ganga has purified you in Banaras. And that Ganga is nobody else than the who has actually washed the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And that has come. And Lord Shiva, who actually receives the Ganga on his head, he worships the Supreme Lord Krishna in Banaras. This is how he answered that verse. So is it not proper to worship Krishna and to chant the holy name rather than talking about any other Vedanta philosophy? This was the answer from Swarup Damodar to Prakashananda Saraswati. So the answer came back after a few weeks and Prakashananda Saraswati got this answer. When he got the answer, he thought, I think he is jumping a little ahead of him. That was his reaction to Swarup Damodar, because these scholars, they are not easy to tame. They are not people whom you can easily catch like that. You can't tell them something and get away with it. They have an answer for everything. Anything you object, they will have an answer for that. Because their studies and knowledge and realizations are also high, and they have actually immersed themselves into the Vedic literature so deeply that they throughout their life, such a strong engagement in spiritual activities has made their mind so sharp, and intelligence also, apart from the mode of goodness, they cultivate through their process of cultivating the practice in the spiritual life. So the next thing what he did was, he immediately repeated another verse back to him. Sanimat.
But this verse is more important, interesting than the other one. What he said in that verse was, Vishwamitra para ashara prabhadayo vadambu parnashana te vistri bukhavangajam sulalidam drishtvaiva moham gadaha shalinyam sakradam payodhati yudam punjandi e manava tesham indriya nigraho yadi bhavel vindyastarel sagaram.
Meanwhile, our Prakashananda Saraswati heard that Mahaprabhu is eating nice prasadam, very enjoying all the time nice prasadam with the association of the devotees. So he caught him there. He meant to tell Mahaprabhu that this is not sannyasa ashram. Why? Because in the earlier history, personalities like Vishwamitra, Parashara, they were all very, very great sages. And they are well known in the impersonalist tradition for personalities who have performed wonderful austerities and penances. If you read about Vishwamitra's penances in the Ramayana as well as in the other Puranas, you will find that nobody could think about those austerities, what he has performed. Such a great personality. Parashara also, Vyasa Maharshi's father, Parashara Muni. So he says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vishwamitra and Parashara, these two sannyasis, do you know how they have performed the penances? He says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they performed penances, they were eating air, and they were sometimes eating leaves, and sometimes a bit of water. This is how they were performing penances. And what happened then, he says, that Vishwamitra, when he was performing these penances for a very, very long time, one day, our Indra got upset about it with him. So what did Indra do? Indra sent Menaka, one Apsara's woman, from there. And you know what happened after that. That Menaka came there, and Vishwamitra, not eating, not drinking, not sleeping, was performing these penances. But as soon as he heard the jingling sound of the anklets, he woke up from the samadhi. And then what happened? And what happened? Shakuntala was born. That's all. So this is the austerities, what Vishwamitra has done. And so if that can happen to Vishwamitra, who has performed such austerities and penances, even they have fallen down. And I'm hearing that you are having first class prasadam with yogurt, ghee, milk, sugar, and all these things. You are eating all these things, nicely prepared by other people, and enjoying this prasadam, and you are telling me that you are a sannyasi. He said, this was the meaning. That's what he said. Vishwamitra parashara prabhadayo vadambu parnashana tevi srimukha pangajam sulalitam drushtvaiva mohangadaha. That when they saw the face of Menaka, immediately Vishwamitra lost control of everything. And then what has happened, you know, he says to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that shalyanam sakradam payo dhati yudam bhunjandi e manavaha tesham indriya nigraho yadi bhavel vindyastarel sagaram. Then if you think that with all of this eating this nice prasadam you can still control your senses, then I will start believing that Vindhya mountains will start swimming in the ocean. This is, he said, that Vindhya mountains is so stable that it doesn't normally move at all. And that mountain, I'll start believing that it has started swimming in the sea. Because I have to believe that if you are able to control your senses with all this beautiful prasadam you are taking. So this verse was written and send it straight away to Mahaprabhu. This is the answer for your question. This is the answer, he said. And send it back to Mahaprabhu. So again, the answer came back as usual. When the answer came back, Swarup Damodar got the message. Swarup Damodar read it. He thought, this time it has gone too far. I'm not going to take it to Mahaprabhu. I'll reply it myself, he said. So Swarup Damodar, whatever Swarup Damodar did, Mahaprabhu will approve it. That was the system. And Mahaprabhu never once in any time during his pastimes in this world ever once
found anything fault in Swarup Damodar's dealings. That is the greatness of that personality. Swarup Damodar was such a devotee that never associated with others freely, always maintained his gravity in his life, that he acted totally in the service of Mahaprabhu. And it is only because of Swarup Damodar that we have this good fortune of hearing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Why? Swarup Damodar maintained a diary of the activities of Mahaprabhu and the mood of Mahaprabhu on different days, which he later on passed on in this diary, which came through the great devotees to our to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and who managed to bring them into Chaitanya Charitamrita. So therefore we have a great obligation, in debt to Swarup Damodar for what he has done for us. And to have a personality like Swarup Damodar, who was a close associate of Mahaprabhu, decided that he will not tolerate this kind of criticism, that in the name of prasadam, that for a devotee, prasadam is very, very dear thing. And if somebody tells a devotee, of course we shouldn't eat too much prasadam, there is no doubt about that. But to speak offensively against prasadam is not a good thing. That if Krishna has enjoyed a prasadam, that is the happiness of a devotee. A devotee doesn't get happiness by anything else. That if somebody who has cooked a first class prasadam to offer to Krishna, and if Krishna has always, time and again, in various instances, has confirmed that a prasadam nicely cooked is that what Krishna wants. And Krishna has told this in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in many instances to the devotees also. When he enjoyed with the cowherd boys in Vrindavanam, when they were enjoying the feast, when the Brahmanas women brought that feast and offered, served Krishna, Radharani and everybody there on that particular day, Krishna released that prasadam so much. In the Bhagavatam, there is reference to it. What Krishna enjoys is the association of the devotee, not the rules and regulations. Rules and regulations have its own limitations also. That when one instance, great sages, they are meditating on Krishna. The great yogis, they are practicing very, very difficult yoga systems to achieve Krishna. The great jnanis, or the persons who are continuing the process of knowledge, they break their, they use their brain to the highest extent to understand Krishna. But and the great souls who perform sacrifices, then they make the sacrifices. All the sacrifices are meant to please Krishna. That is the goal of the sacrifice. But when all the sacrifices are performed, Krishna never goes there. He doesn't go. He sends to his representatives, like Indra or somebody else, you go and get it, what you want to eat, you can get it. Because demigods are offered by the, they receive the offering through the fire and through the face of the brahmanas. That's two places through which they get the prasadam. So they eat through them, and they are supposed to receive that and pay their respects to Krishna for having given that opportunity from the sacrifice. Krishna doesn't go to them. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam you will find that when the cowherd boys, when the cowherd boys wanted to eat, when they brought their lunch together from home, all the gopis, they have packed their lunch and given to the boys to take it with them. Krishna also had a package with him. Yashodamai has packed a nice lunch and given to Krishna, because one day Krishna complained to Mother Yashoda that I am losing a lot of time, you know, because I go to the forest in the morning, then I have to come back here for lunch, then I go back after prasadam again. That means I lose a couple of hours. He simply wanted to play with the boys all the time. So he found out that if Mother Yashoda can pack a lunch in the morning and give it to him, then he doesn't have to come in the midday. He can come home in the evening after every day is over, bring all the cows and calves back, and play the whole day and save the time. In other words, Krishna was also fond of a picnic. That's what we find in the Bhagavatam. So Krishna, one day, in one of these big feasts, everybody has brought different things prepared by their by the different gopis. They've all prepared. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Shukar is discussing one of those feasts. Very nicely he has discussed that. That describing Krishna, how he was enjoying prasadam with these devotees, with these cowherd boys. Anyone who sees and reads that verse and understands what Sri Shukar was saying through that verse will immediately understand that normally in the big temples also, when food is offered to Krishna, they have to take so much care while cooking ingredients and while offering. They'll make sure that under no circumstances it becomes impure, seen by others, seen by anybody for that matter, because it's for Krishna's pleasure that is being cooked. And they make extreme care, they take extreme care to prepare the prasadam for Krishna. And even then, there is still, they feel, has Krishna accepted my offering or not? They still have that fear in their mind. They feel that, the person was cooked, the person was offered, all of them feel that, has Krishna accepted my offering today or not? That feeling will be there, if they are sincere in their service. But what happened was that when Krishna enjoyed this prasadam with the devotees, he was not thinking about whether somebody is clean or somebody is not clean. Someone was eating, and after half eaten prasadam, Krishna was taking it and eating it from their hands. When Indra saw this, Indra has come and seen what was going on. Indra could not believe this. What was happening was that Bhagavadam says there, Bibradvenam jataravathayo shringave trejagachai vame ipano masanabhalo tadbhala nyangulisho tishtan madhye suvari sukurdaihi hasayan narma visvai dreloge namati bhagushe yajnyabok balageli. Krishna's childhood days, Sri Shukar is saying in one verse, Bibradvenam jadaravathayoho, that Krishna was sitting there with the flute stuck into his dhoti here. Shringave treja kakshai vamai pano kasana kabalo todbhala nyangulishu, that different kinds of vegetables that was cooked by different gopis, they are given to the children. Karela, eggplant, so many things. And the children were, you know, this karela, when they are cut, it's a ring form. They put their fingers through that. And they were eating that. And Krishna was showing them how to put in all the 10 fingers. It's in the Bhagavatam. All these things are mentioned. So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eating like this, Indra was thinking that even when he doesn't come, when all big sacrifices are made, he doesn't want to eat that. Shringave treja kakshai vamei pano masrana kabalo tudbhala nyangulishum, that vegetables in all the different fingers. And in the hand, Krishna has kept the rice cooked with ghee and so many other things nicely. Krishna was eating that. Krishna is eating that, and he wanted to share what other mothers have cooked. So he was eating their food also. So, and then he was making the comment, your mother doesn't know how to cook. He said to many of the boys who were present there, not only he said that, told them not to cook, you should tell your mother to come and have trained by my mother for a few days. This was what Krishna told them. Krishna says to them, Tudbhala nyangulishu tishtan madhye sabari sukhurdein, that in the middle of all the cowherd boys, Krishna was sitting there and enjoying that feast. And that enjoyment, he couldn't find it in the brahmanas serving them in the big feast. Krishna couldn't find that. Tishtan madhye sabari sukhurdeihi hasayan narma bhisvaihi, that Krishna was enjoying so much and joking with them also all the time. So you will see there is a picture of that in the Krishna book. Prabhupada has put there that Krishna sitting surrounded by all the cowherd boys together having the feast. It is this verse behind that picture. It is from this verse. It is one of the beautiful forms of Krishna for meditation. Throughout Srimad Bhagavatam there are so many places where Krishna's forms are described, in what form different devotees meditate different forms of Krishna. This is one of a beautiful presentation of Krishna's taking prasadam with the other cowherd boys. tishtan madhye sumari suhrdai hasayin marma visvaihi surge loge mishadi bhuje yajna bhok balageli balageli. It was the childhood pastime of Krishna. So to tell somebody that you should not enjoy prasadam is something like shooting him with a gun. It is that bad for a devotee. Cannot accept that. That if Krishna has taken food and if he is giving you that, how can you reject that? Now, so therefore, Surup Damodar's position was in relationship with these two, Prakashananda Saraswati, is that you have to understand this. And I will explain that. He said, he answered in another verse to him. The answer was so appropriate. If you read and understand, you will see. Singho bali dviradasu garamamsa bhoji samvalsarena kurude redi megavaram paravadastrna shikha kunamatra bhogi kami bhavedanudinam vadagotra hedu. This was the verse. In simple terms, what he was trying to say was that Simham, the lion, it eats the meat of all the elephants, the boar, and any deer, every animal. So normally, one who is eating so much meat naturally has to have very strong sexually agitated mind as well, because meat eating has got that great success in that. That higher the quantity of meat eating, it obviously creates agitation in the mind. But Surup Damodar asking one question to Prakashananda Saraswati. The lion in the forest eats all these kind of things. But ultimately, lion has sex only once in a lifetime or once a year. How is that possible? Whereas the birds, particularly some of the birds, they eat only the grass and leaves sometimes. That's all what they get to eat. But they are constantly having the sexual relationship with their partners. So food is not the only reason, he said. Because he was criticizing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that you are having so much prasadam and therefore you cannot control your senses. This is what Prakashananda Saraswati was warning Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's and Surup Damodar's answer to that was that if it is like that, if food is the only cause of the sexual agitation of the mind, the lion who is having so much meat in his diet, he has only sexual relationship once a year. And the birds, many of these birds who have very frugal food, very simply leaves and some small insects, even they seem to be always agitated. So your logic doesn't come right, he said. So Surup Damodar answered in this way to Prakashananda Saraswati. So when he got the answer, Prakashananda Saraswati started realizing, then there is something else to it then. Mahaprabhu must have something more to say than that. By now, Prakashananda Saraswati's heart was melting, because it is difficult when Krishna himself comes and gives that opportunity to come back to him. The fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the association to Prakashananda Saraswati shows that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a high regard for him. Somehow or the other, due to certain tendencies, he has taken this process of Jnana Margam. Mahaprabhu had nothing against it. What was Mahaprabhu's objection was that perfection of life is not developing this knowledge. Knowledge is good, there is nothing wrong in that. But ultimately, if one does not become Krishna conscious, all your so-called knowledge is all useless, because Vedavyasa Maharshi himself has confirmed this. That if the knowledge ultimately does not get you attracted to Krishna, then what use is that knowledge? That is what he is saying. That it is the ultimate goal is that you become Krishna conscious and get attracted to Krishna. If you come through Jnana Margam, if you come through Karma Margam, it doesn't matter. But ultimately, if there is no devotion, there is no surrender to Krishna, and accept and take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, there is no other point in studying all these things. And Vedavyasa Maharshi's words is, Jnanam naivati yatnam munirapavadade brahma tattvam tu shrunven. That Vedavyasa Maharshi in all the literature has condemned simply accumulating knowledge for the sake of knowledge. That is no good, because jnanam naiva adiyatnam muni apavadade brahmadattvam tushanvan gadham tulpadavaktim sharanagaideyastasya mukti karagrem. That one who has trying for liberation in this way, tulpadavakti sharanagaideyastasya mukti karagrem. If he has gone and become a devotee of Krishna, for him liberation is easily attainable. That is Vedavyasa Maharshi's conclusion is, gadam tulpada bhaktim sharanamaydiya tasya mukti karagre. Karagre means the fingertips. Liberation is available for him. Tudhyane biha tulyam punar asugarada chitta chanjalya hedoho. Then in that process, often the mind will go this way, that way. That is the nature of the mind. Every devotee also experiences that. That in our Krishna consciousness process, often we get disturbed in our mind. Sometimes we think, am I doing the right thing? Am I missing out something in this world? All kinds of thoughts comes to us. And sometimes these thoughts can overpower you or take away your concentration or focus in spiritual life. Like, nicely, one is chanting Hare Krishna and is enjoying the chanting process. But sometimes, if the doubts start building up inside, he start become weakened or slackened in his process. Tudhyane piha tulyam punarasugarada chittam chanjalya hedoho. That chittam, the mind, is gone like a pendulum in the clock. Sometimes this direction, sometimes that direction. That is the nature of the mind, that you can't change it. That is how Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, in the Srimad Bhagavatam as well, that this mind will go backwards and forwards, that you can't avoid it. Abhyasa dashu shakyam. In that situation, what should one do? Abhyasa dashu shakyam tadaviva shaidam tuval kripa charyutabhyam. That the devotee says to Krishna, this is my situation. What am I supposed to do? I want to take your shelter. I want to surrender to you. I want to take and chant the holy name all the time. Abhyasa dashu shakyam tadabhivashayidam tuval kripa charyutabhyam. That kripa, that Krishna's mercy, is what will protect him at that time. Nothing else. That when the mind is swinging in both directions, and it is very difficult to get that mind under control. Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, the devotee can pray to Krishna to get his mind under control, and Krishna will protect him from a difficult situation. Tul kripa charyutabhyam. Charyuta is a word which is very difficult to explain, in the sense that the attraction what Krishna gives to a devotee will automatically shelter him even in that very critical times in his life when he is trying to advance spiritually. So from this you can see that devotees have this shelter than Krishna's lotus feet. That is the shelter of a devotee. And the devotee who has taken shelter of Krishna's lotus feet has never have to worry about anything. Whereas for the jnani, he has no shelter. His shelter, he is studying the books and he is practicing it, things. But ultimately, he has nobody to take shelter of. And therefore, Prakashananda Saraswati mind started changing and started experiencing this change happening to him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's shelter was a great shelter for Prakashananda Saraswati. Prakashananda Saraswati slowly started unwinding himself. He started thinking that if I have not, Krishna has come to me in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's form and telling me that this is what I should do. And if I don't do it, how foolish I am. That is the good quality of that jnani. He was a great jnani, no doubt about it. But at the same time, he had the intelligence to accept the authority at the right time. We shouldn't think that Prakashananda Saraswati was a very, very very highly offensive person. We can't think like that. Because after all, he was given the mercy by Mahaprabhu, which we haven't got still. So from that point of view, from our point of view, we have to see them in a higher position. Because they had the good fortune that Mahaprabhu decided to bestow this mercy on him. Why? The reason being that Mahaprabhu knows that Prakashananda Saraswati is following the tradition. has not deviated from the Vedic tradition anywhere. You don't find him. He has followed the tradition, but at the same time, he did not understand that. Ultimate goal of all this is ultimately to surrender to Krishna. And if that doesn't happen, then all the learning, all the knowledge, and all the practicing, everything is simply a waste of time. So having realized this, Prakashananda Saraswati decided to take shelter of Mahaprabhu. And that is what we find next stage, that Prakashananda Saraswati was given shelter by Mahaprabhu and fell down at Mahaprabhu's feet and asked for forgiveness. And Mahaprabhu bestowed him with the highest benediction of Krishna consciousness to him. Just like Rupa and Sanatana also, we find the same way. Rupa and Sanatana, their great-great-grandfather, who travelled from Karnataka all the way to Bengal. That is, his name was Padmanabha. That who was the person who first moved from Karnataka to Bengal. So Padmanabha had five sons, and out of them, the last son was, his name was Mukundadeva. So this Mukundadeva, he was one of the five sons of Padmanabha, who lived in Bangladesh, current Bangladesh, at that time, Bengal. So Mukundadev had one son called Kumaradev. So this Kumaradev they followed the tradition, and Kumaradev was fortunate that he taught when he got married, and he married Revati Devi, and from that three boys were born. Amar, Sandosh and Anup, they were the three boys who were born, who later on become Rupa, Sanatana and Anupam. That was the name which they got later. But from the parents they got Amar, Sandosh and Anupam. And these three brothers, they went through such a change in their life that what we find when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita is that Rupa became Dabirghas, Sanatana became Sakara Malik, and they changed their habits. The parents taught them, Kumaradev taught them Parsi, Arabic and Sanskrit. All three languages were taught to them. Very intelligent personalities. So therefore, the Nawab has used them in their service. But due to association, they lost the culture. They lost the culture. They had developed the habits of the rulers at that time. Not only that, they also started associating with them very closely. You will see later on how much Rupa and Sanatana repented for that, for what they have done. And that you will only understand when you read the later time in Rupa and Sanatana's life. But although these things happened due to bad association with them, there was one thing that has protected Rupa and Sanatana in those days. What was that? That was Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam protected Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami in their days when they had associated with the people whom they had associated and caused their change. When first time when Sanatana Goswami came to see Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu was aware that Sanatana Goswami was waiting outside. He told Chandrasekhar, who was hosting him, that there is a Vaishnava standing outside. Go and bring him in, he said. So when he went out, Chandrasekhar didn't see anybody there. He saw a Muslim standing there. And he came back and told Mahaprabhu, there is nobody, there is no Vaishnava there, he said. So Mahaprabhu came out and embraced Sanatana Goswami and brought him in. And Chandrasekhar could not understand what this personality is all about. Mahaprabhu told him, pay your obeisances to him. He said, why, this is Krishna. Krishna can see one's heart, who is that person. And Sanatana Goswami, from that day, his character, what he displayed throughout his life towards Rupa Goswami and his time in Vrindavan, is the classic example of renunciation. What is renunciation? If you want to see, you have to read Sanatana Goswami's life since he's met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at one point, there was a great scholar, Jagadananda Pandit, who came to see Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri. So our Sanatana Goswami, due to his condition which he had to go through in his early life, often he would not go closer to the Jagannath Puri temple even, because he condemned himself for what he has done in his early life, that I have associated with people which I should not have done. Having got a birth in a family which was a very elevated birth, I have fallen to such a level that I should not contaminate Lord Jagannath's associates or the area around that. This was Sanatana Goswami's humility. Compare that with some of our humility. That is also good to compare sometimes. As soon as after a year is gone in the moment, we think that we are liberated souls sometimes. That's how we are. And when we go and stand in front of Krishna, we think, oh, I have come now, just to tell Krishna that I have arrived now in front of him. We want to make sure that Krishna recognizes us. That is us. And that is Sanatana Goswami, a personality who had that humility in him, that after after going through a life of such a degradation, he was able to recognize that, that this is Krishna, that in front of Krishna there is nothing to cover up. You have to know one's own position, what we are. It is better to recognize that fact, rather than to cover up things in front of Krishna and say that, look, I am such a pure devotee from day one when I came to you. This attitude will not help. So Sanatana Goswami met Jagadananda Pandit in the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jagadananda Pandit realized that Sanatana Goswami was experiencing this difficulty in going to Jagannath Mandir, to Jagannath Ji's temple, and also to associate with the other devotees. The only association Sanatana Goswami was seeking in Jagannath Puri was the association of Haridas Thakur. Why? He thought, Haridas Thakur at least will not reject me. This was his humility. That Haridas Thakur, also coming from a birth like that, he was willing to tolerate that, he was thinking that I will not be rejected at least by Haridas Thakur. Whereas, if I do and associate with others, what will they feel about it? They are all, after all, elevated personality. Sanatana Goswami is thinking like this. And if Sanatana Goswami is thinking like that, what should we be thinking? This is what we have to think about. So, from there you can see that in one instance, Jagadananda Pandit, who was an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sanatana Goswami's body was full of diseases. Different diseases is captured at that time. And Mahaprabhu always embraced Sanatana Goswami wholeheartedly. Every time he embraced, Sanatana Goswami felt ashamed to be embraced by Mahaprabhu. He felt in his own heart that with this wretched body, what should I do? And at one point, Sanatana Goswami wanted to give up his body. And who saved him? Mahaprabhu saved him. Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that material body is not yours. And if somebody is committing a suicide and giving up this body, it is done in the mode of ignorance. Tamoguna pradhanam, it is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that it is only out of tamoguna that one commits suicide. The material body is not ours. Krishna has given us this body to serve him. And now I own that body, Mahaprabhu explained to him, that if you don't use that body in my service, then you are not going to get anywhere. You will go into other hellish situations. Mahaprabhu very strictly warned Sanatana Goswami. Having heard all these things, Jagannanda Pandit, Mahaprabhu, Sanatana Goswami was in a difficult situation, and he was constantly saying to Jagannanda Pandit, who was a close associate, that I am so fallen and degraded, that what is my condition in this world? Jagannanda Pandit in one instance thought that he has the authority to instruct Sanatana Goswami. So he told Sanatana Goswami, you should go to Vrindavan and live there, away from all these places, because it's not good for you to associate here with people. And Mahaprabhu heard this. What did Mahaprabhu do? Mahaprabhu immediately called Jagadananda Pandit and told him, do you understand this, Vaishnava? He said to him, pay your obeisances to him first. And then he told him, this Sanatana Goswami and his brother Rupa Goswami, it is through these two personalities that I will spread Krishna consciousness in this world. And he gave that mercy to Sanatana Goswami. And we find that mercy manifesting later on in the form of Radha Madan Mohan Temple and so many other great Vaishnava literature which Sanatana Goswami has produced. So often you will find that someone, due to circumstances, may fall into into difficult situations in life. That can happen always. Nobody can guarantee that you will always... none of us can claim, really, that we had such a fantastic upbringing or background in us to claim that. But so long as we recognize that and approach Krishna, even in a fallen condition like Sanatana Goswami had received Krishna's mercy through Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu elevated him and gave him the topmost position. And same thing, there is so much in the Andilila to talk about. But Mahaprabhu's mercy, particularly to these two devotees, Rupa and Sanatana, is something which we will find again and again mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And not only Mahaprabhu sent them to Vrindavan, and not knowing what they wanted to do there, because by now, after serving so many years as ministers in the Nawab Hussain Shah's administration, these two personalities have virtually lost everything. But even the time when they were there, when they were slowly started realizing, this deeper realization came to them when they started reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It is from Srimad Bhagavatam that inspired them to look for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and look for Mahaprabhu's shelter. And Mahaprabhu knew all the way through that they are the people who have understood Srimad Bhagavatam. And because they have understood Srimad Bhagavatam, Mahaprabhu entrusted them or gave them the authority to write so many books in relationship with Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. And then later on we find Rupa and Sanatana were given specific instructions by Mahaprabhu. They did not know what to do in Vrindavan. They had no money with them. They had nothing with them. In addition to that, they didn't have they didn't have the strength in them to do anything at that point in time. And both Rupa and Sanatana put their hands heads at the feet of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and mentioned to Mahaprabhu, "We will go to Vrindavanam if you want us to go there." Mahaprabhu said to them, "Go to Vrindavanam and do what I said, and it will all happen by Krishna's arrangement." And that is what. Therefore, when Rupa and Sanatana went to Vrindavanam, and that Rupa and Sanatana, what they have done in Vrindavanam, we don't have to say anything about it. People know what they did in Vrindavanam. Radha Govindaji Mandir and Radha Madan Mohan Temple, the two temples they have built in Vrindavanam, Krishna and Nagarani constantly served them in Vrindavanam due to their elevated condition. So it does not matter, even one may fall into difficult situations in life, but so long as one is recognizing one's position and surrender to Krishna in that mood, Krishna is always protecting the devotee. There is no instance when it has not happened. And Mahaprabhu, seeing that humility in Sanatana and Rupa, in all circumstances, they realize that these are the two devotees who can establish Krishna consciousness according to Mahaprabhu's way of thinking. And that's what exactly happened. Rupa Goswami, when he came to see Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri, he has to travel through a place called Satyabhamapuram. Satyabhamapuram is one village. And while resting in that village at night, Satyabhama appeared in the dream to Rupa Goswami and spoke to Rupa Goswami a few things. Rupa Goswami himself records that later. Before he came to see Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami wanted to compile the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwaraka. He compiled everything together and one book he wrote. He wrote this one book and he wanted to present it to Mahaprabhu and get approval from Mahaprabhu about it. So in that night when he was sleeping, Satyabhama appeared and told Rupa Goswami that what you have written is very good. But I do not like you mixing Vrindavan and Dwaraka and Madhura together. Can you separate them out and make it into two books? That one book should be purely Vrindavana pastimes. The other book you can combine with Madhura and Dwaraka together. And that is how one which was originally written developed into two books, Vidagdha Madhava referring to the pastimes in Vrindavanam, and Lalita Madhava referring to the pastimes in Madhura and Dwaraka, which were written separately. And two books, two Mangalacharanam, all the invocation songs, two different verses for offering their obeisances to Krishna. So, these verse books were written, and Rupa Goswami came to see in Jagannath Puri, came to see Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu saw Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami's meeting, because Rupa Goswami met Mahaprabhu first time, before Sanatana Goswami. In the eyes of Mahaprabhu, Rupa is eldest, although by birth Rupa Goswami is younger than Sanatana. Generally among the devotees, Rupa Goswami is considered as the elder brother, for this reason only, that he is the one first person who met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and received his mercy, and later on Sanatana came and joined him. So that is why Rupa Goswami is considered to be the leader of the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, or what we are called as Rupanugas. So all the followers of Prabhupada, all the followers of Rupa Goswami, they follow this message through what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given to Rupa Goswami, which Rupa Goswami established through his through his different literature, what he has presented in about Krishna. And when, in one instance, when he was in Jagannath Puri, it so happened that Mahaprabhu relished Rupa Goswami's humility so much that Rupa Goswami, like Sanatana, always considered himself to be very, very low. That I have done something wrong. I have fallen into wrong association. Now how can I forget that? I cannot wipe it off from my record. This was what Rupa Goswami's attitude was. And because it always reminded him of the state of life what he led, he was always conscious also in dealing with Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu appreciated that humility very much. You can see that in one instance, then Rupa Goswami was in Jagannath Puri. Rupa Goswami also, both all the devotees together came to see him. Rupa was staying with Haridas Thakur, and at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Surup Damodar, and also Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, they all came to see him there. And in that, when he came to see him, Rupa Goswami wasn't there. But Rupa Goswami has compiled a verse and he has stuck it in the below the rafter, where generally people have this tendency in India particularly. They will write on the palmyra leaf. For safety reasons, they will stick it underneath the rafters, the tiles, and below the rafters, they will stick it somewhere there so that it's not taken away by anybody. It was a system in the villages like that. So our Rupa Goswami wrote some verses and he kept it there. And in one instance, when Mahaprabhu recited a verse in the about his consciousness, Surup Damodar heard that and spoken about that to Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami understood what was the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that verse, what he wrote about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, became so popular that Rupa Goswami was able to capture the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Often Mahaprabhu's many pastimes were not understood by many of the devotees. They were not able to understand because they were so elevated activities of the Krishna's devotee. And only unless and until one comes to that state of mind, one cannot appreciate that. Just like in this material world also, some of these rasas or mellows, what we refer to, unless one has some mellow, he cannot understand what a mellow means. So if one has no mellow, stone-hearted, what he will understand about mellow? So this mellows, what Rupa Goswami has expressed in this, Priyasoyam Krishna, Sahajaravini Kshetra Milidas Tathanam Saradha, Upayadayo Sangama Sukham, Tadapyandekhenan. Rupa Goswami was talking about the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Radharani's mood, saying to Krishna, Priyasoyam Krishna Sahajarajari Kshetra Milidas Tathanam Saradha Tadivubhayo Sankhama Sukham. That in Krishna, Radharani and Krishna met each other, not in Vrindavan, in Kurukshetra at one time. And Radharani saying to Krishna, tadaphyanda kelan madhuram murali panjamajushe manome kalenni pulina vivinaya sprahedim. That when I met you in Kurukshetra, I never felt happy as much as when we used to meet in Vrindavanam. This was the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. That meeting Krishna in Vrindavan is very special. It is not the same as meeting Krishna in Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra, by now, Krishna has become a very powerful king and manipulating the different kings in the war against Mahabharata war and all. And he was a politician at that time. He was not anymore the little boy who enjoyed the association of the gopis in Vrindavanam. Radharani says to Krishna, Tadaphyanda kelan madhuram urali panjamajushe manome kalindi pulini viminayas prahayadi. That I remember those days when you were a little boy in Vrindavan and when you played the flute for our pleasure. And that pleasure and the Krishna's playing the flute is a well-known thing, and the gopis are the persons who have judged about Krishna. Even Sukadeva Goswami never spoke about Krishna's playing flute. The only people who could judge about Krishna's playing flute were the gopis. So knowing very well, Radharani said to Krishna, although I meet you in Kurukshetra, when I met you in Vrindavan, then happiness I am not getting here. This was Radharani's complaint. Rupa Goswami mentioned, this was the mood of Mahaprabhu also, that meeting Krishna was very special in that special conditions which I am missing all the time. And that is what Rupa Goswami, that was that loving in separation what we call as the in the conjugal relationship, that extreme pressure what Mahaprabhu was experiencing at that time in separation from Krishna in the mood of Radharani was what Rupa Goswami put through that verse. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu read that verse, he couldn't believe that. How come Rupa Goswami captured my thinking so nicely, and he really loved that so much that he wanted that put into Vidagdha Madhava, and the verse came into Vidagdha Madhava like that. So like that, there are so many instances where Mahaprabhu and his devotees reciprocated that loving relationship so nicely that Andhilila pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is worthwhile reading many, many times. And every time you read, you will understand so many things that Mahaprabhu was trying to teach to this world. Unfortunately, we haven't got so much time. It's 7 o'clock, 7:15. So if there's any questions, please.
Yes, good question. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's the person that initiated him,
mm-hmm.
he initiated Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into chanting the holy name.
Yeah.
That sannyasi came from the Bharati line, which was in the line of Shankaracharya. I just find it quite strange that someone in the Shankaracharya line, you know, is going against tradition from what you were actually saying. Mm. He must have been a rebel to actually say, go.
No.
how does it
fit in? It's not like that. When you say initiated by Kesho Bharati,
yeah.
Kesho Bharati was a sannyasi in the Shankaracharya's tradition.
Right.
What Mahaprabhu took from him is the sannyasa mantra from him. But prior to that, Ishwarapuri was actually the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Ishwarapuri was a disciple of Madhavendrapuri. Madhavendrapuri was the first sannyasi who established bhakti process very strongly among the sannyasis. So from Madhavendrapuri, Ishwarapuri, from Ishwarapuri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the process of chanting the holy name. He didn't take it from Kesho Bharati. What from Kesho Bharati, he was following the tradition of taking sannyasam. Because normally you get initiated as a brahmachari, and then the system is you become a brahmachari first, and then you live as a brahmachari for a certain number of years. And at a particular time in life, if you have completed your brahmachari ashram, because in the brahmachari ashram you are supposed to study all the books and learn things. And later on, when your time for marriage, one
performs a ceremony known as samavartanam. Samavartanam is performed, and after samavartanam you decide whether you want to get married. If you want to get married, if not, from brahmachari ashram you can take to sannyas ashram straight away. So our Mahaprabhu's case, this is what has happened. He was a brahmachari. He finished his brahmachari ashram. So up to that time he was chanting the holy name under instruction from Ishwarapuri. So then he took sannyasam ashram from Keshava Bharati, because the reason for that was that Shankaracharya's tradition was so strong that time that the Vedic system, sannyasa ashram was generally a system which he has established and everybody else followed. So Mahaprabhu had nothing problem with that, that he didn't have any objection to that system. But Mahaprabhu's main objection was that not accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrendering to Him, instead gone studying books and trying to argue and logicize things and wasting lifetime, that's where he disagreed.
Sandhu, King Pratapudra was very humility to approach Mahaprabhu,
yes,
to serve,
yes,
him.
Yes.
And Mahaprabhu rejected him to see him. But he embraced his son. So Mahaprabhu, why he did like that?
Yes. You see, the son is not holding any position, first of all. Son is free from it. He's just a child who doesn't have any... people will not say anything. There are certain things Mahaprabhu has done which will look very, very harsh on people. Like, there are 3-4 instances in the Charitamrita mentioned about it. But when you reflect on that, you can see why Mahaprabhu did that. It was necessary to be done. Because Mahaprabhu, under no circumstances, will denigrate the sannyasa ashram. Once they have taken sannyasa ashram, he will maintain the rigidity and the the gravity of that ashram. Otherwise, it's no meaning. You become a sannyasi and then you become live like a householder. That's no good. So he wanted to show that to the world, because if he doesn't act like that, what will happen to the other sannyasis? That was this. And Mayavadis were strong on that point. So if he has to present Krishna consciousness, he has to maintain that standard. It is necessary. When the case of Junior Haridas, who actually did something, he hasn't done a very serious offense. You must have read that in the Charitamrita. All he has done, yeah, he was a sannyasi. All he has done, he was requested by Bhagavan Acharya to go and get some rice from Shikimati. He went and got some rice. And Mahaprabhu found out that he has brought some rice from... Where did this nice rice come from? While he was taking prasadam, he realized that. So they said that Haridas has gone. Haridas was a sannyasi. He has gone and got this rice from Shikimati. So Mahaprabhu, after the meal was over, called him and told him that you cannot stay with me anymore. You have to leave for this simple thing. Can you imagine that, how strict he was? He said, you can't stay with me anymore. And he rejected him. So he left, went away. After he went away, others started feeling, because he was a nice person for others. He was not heavy person or anything. Anyway, he was not a troublesome character. So others started bringing representation to Mahaprabhu to tell him that you should accept him. He is feeling too much. Because suppose one day Krishna tells you, don't come to the temple anymore. How much would you feel? Yeah, that is the same situation. Eh? Is Krishna is Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is, and here Krishna is right there in Mahaprabhu's form. He's telling you, don't come to me anymore. I think most of us will say, all right, if you don't want to see me, I will. We will be like that. We don't know what that separation means. But for a devotee, it is different. For a devotee knows, if Krishna rejects me, what else have I got in this world? That is devotee's consciousness. We don't have that problem. So we do anything. We will come, okay, if you don't want it, so fine with me. I'm all right. That's us. But when Mahaprabhu rejected him, Haridas felt so upset that he said to Haridas felt so upset that he said to the others that please recommend to him somehow to accept me. They all tried very, very hard to bring Haridas back into the light again, to life again. Mahaprabhu said, no, it is better that he commit suicide, he said. Now, when this happened, Haridas has no choice. Haridas went and jumped into the Ganges and killed himself. And later on, he took the form of a Gandharva and he was singing the kirtan for Mahaprabhu. I mean, Mahaprabhu was bathing in the sea. Now, people may think that this is a very heavy punishment to give to somebody and that the thing what he did was wrong. Mahaprabhu was absolutely justified in saying that because for a sannyasi, after he has reached that position, if he associates with women, even a slight doubt from anyone is a black spot on that person's character. That's not allowed from the Vedic system. It's not allowed. Prabhupada used to say about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, one couple used to come and see him and he wanted to talk in privately with, remember that story, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati?
One mother just
yeah. He said, no, that's not possible. Because that is the sannyasa standard. And if one does not maintain that standard, sannyasa ashram loses its potency. It's lost its value. So there are so many realizations associated with these things. So similarly, here, Mahaprabhu was rejecting the king for one reason only, that if you go to the king, people will think, oh, he's a friend of the king. Mm-hmm. Generally, people have this tendency. Normal people, ordinary people in this world, they judge everything from what they see with their eyes. They can't see anything beyond than that. So they will start judging Mahaprabhu, oh, the king is getting some favor from the king. And therefore, the relationship, you know, they are, you know, trying to yeah support each other or whatever you call it. Yeah. So Mahaprabhu doesn't want that. He wanted to maintain that identity of sannyasa ashram seriously. Therefore, he decided, and in circumstances, I will not accept him. I do not need that. And it was always like that among the top sannyasis. They will not accept any kind of association with those who are in power or ruling the country or who are kings, that they have no value because as far as they are concerned, you have been put there by your karma, there is nothing more than that. And they don't need any support from anybody. It is Krishna who is there, they are reporting directly to Krishna. So they are not reporting to the king or they are not reporting to anybody. So that's the reason behind it. And Mahaprabhu maintained this principle all along in his sannyasa ashram. And that's why that 24 he took sannyas. The last remaining 24 years, you will see that Mahaprabhu's sannyasa ashram is something which is worthwhile studying seriously for those who wants to take sannyas. One is capable of doing that, but one should understand from that so much.
I can recall it. A story that happened to me personally some time ago, back in 1973 when the manor was just bought and the devotees had just moved in not so long since. And at that time I had a young stepson, his name was Premananda Das. And I think he was only 5 years old, 5 or 6. And I lived here at the time with my then wife. And I was sitting in this room, and Prabhupada was there, right there, and the room was full, even fuller than this. It was chock-a-block, people, visitors, and Prabhupada was giving satsang right there. And all of a sudden, the door opened, and my little stepson, he came into the room, dressed up as a sannyasi. His mum had made all the sannyasi outfit, and even a little danda as well, and he was shaved up. And so Premananda keep walking in the door and Prabhupada stopped speaking and he smiled like this and he said, "Ah, Maharaj, come." So Premananda, he came climbing over everyone to come and sit right here in front of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada gave him a sweet.
Yeah.
And he was just beaming at that little Premananda. He was so happy to see this little sannyasi figure sitting there, and so he began to talk to Premananda and almost ignored everyone else in the room. He began a conversation with this little child. So that was just, that was quite an experience.
Mm.
But the point was that on the next morning, the following morning, Premananda, he decided that he liked the sannyasi because, you know, everyone was going, oh, you look great, you know, you look fine. So he was still dressed up as the sannyasi, and he was downstairs in the prasadam room, where the prasadam room is now.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was playing with some of the other kids, and he was swinging the danda like this, and he was all, his clothes were everywhere, and he was getting a bit dirty, and he was hitting people with the danda. And Prabhupada came in, he came from his morning walk.
Yeah.
He just finished the morning walk, and he came in with some of his disciples and the sannyasis, as it were, you know. And immediately Prabhupada, I was there also, I could see Prabhupada's face was very grave. And he immediately looked round at one of the disciples and he said, who is the father? And of course it came to me that Prabhupada wants to see you. So I came up to Prabhupada and he said that you shouldn't let him dress like this anymore. He said, sannyas is very serious.
Yes, a very serious business, yes.
And it was the how he said that, to the gravity in Prabhupada's voice, really got to me, you know, that said, sannyas is a very serious business.
Yes.
And it was almost as though what went on the night before hadn't happened at all.
Yeah.
Prabhupada didn't want to see it again, that he was dressed like this.
Yeah. Prabhupada always used to give respect to sannyasis, no matter which tradition they came from. Even if they were from the other traditions, you would respect them because that is the tradition. That sannyasa ashram, Krishna also recognizes that in the Bhagavatam, very specifically mentions the sannyasi's position. So it becomes important that we follow that strictly, otherwise it makes no sense. And Mahaprabhu was a classical example. All the acharyas, they were like that. None of them, whether it was Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarka Swami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they all strictly adhere to the codes. And for them, whether you commit suicide or you commit whatever you like, you can do, but they can't disturb the ashram or national system.
So while referring the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Prakashan Saraswati, which was so detailed we heard today, said at the last point that it doesn't ruin that Mahaprabhu, which is trying to teach, the same Shankaracharya taught through the song of Paja Govindam.
Unless cultivating spiritual knowledge is good, there's nothing wrong in that. But what the point is that ultimately it should not finish there. Because from knowledge comes happiness. There's no doubt about that. If you cultivate spiritual knowledge, you will become, mood of goodness will build up inside. And the happiness that comes from mood of goodness is also very, illuminating. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? In so many instances about jnana.
Brahma
Buddha Prasannatma. So many verses, in different instances, Krishna says that jnanam is such a thing that jnanam will make a person. And once you start tasting the spiritual knowledge in through the practice of process of cultivating jnanamargam or process of knowledge, one eventually will enjoy it. But if you don't move further from there, then it is dangerous. That's what he's saying, that Mahaprabhu was saying that. But if you don't end up in Krishna consciousness ultimately, whether you come through jnanam or you come through karma, it doesn't matter, but ultimately it should end up in bhakti. That's what the message is.
Mentioned that Sanatana and Rupa Goswami were given the exalted position of spreading Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
At that particular point in time in history, there must have been more people with humility. Why were they too particularly chosen? Was it because they suffered through this regime under the Nazis?
There are a few reasons.
Well, first of all, before Mahaprabhu gave this authority to Rupa and Sanatana, you have to remember how Rupa and Sanatana approached Mahaprabhu. When they were constantly studying Srimad Bhagavatam at home, Rupa, the three brothers together, they were discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. Out of that, the youngest one was a devotee of Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra. So when the discussion was going on, at home Srimad Bhagavatam, three brothers were discussing. So the two, Rupa and Sanatana, told the youngest one that after reading Srimad Bhagavatam, how can you give up the association of Krishna? This was the question they put forward. So they put a lot of pressure on him to become a devotee of Krishna. Actually, he was the devotee of Lord Ramachandra, Anupam, the youngest one. So Anupam said to them, let me think about it. That I've heard Bhagavatam from all of you now. I'm hearing every day through, because they were discussing. And both of them were very learned personalities. So one whole night, Anupam was thinking through this, the mind. Apparently in the sleep, Ramachandra appeared to him. And he felt, when he saw Ramachandra, he said, how can I leave you now? This is the nature of the mind. Mind is always pulling you in two different directions. All of us experience that in life, isn't it? That sometimes you think, oh, this is the right, and the next other one, this is the next, the opposite way it goes. 180 degrees both ways. Eh? So, same thing happened to him. So in the morning when he got up, he said to Rupa and Sanatana, that you ask me anything else except that, he said. I'll do. But please don't push for this, he said. So when they saw that, Rupa and Sanatana appreciated that. That is commitment. You are worshipping somebody. You worship with that commitment. Don't change your position at any time. Because somebody has said, your attachment is already built up like that with Ramachandra so strongly. So when Rupa and Sanatana were trying to escape from Husain Shah's control, they sent a message to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying that, this is our predicament, we are in this condition, what shall we do? That message you can read in Chaitanya, it is written nicely, very nicely, at how much they were disturbed in their mind. Because on the one hand, Bhagavatam is pulling in one direction. On the other hand, Husain Shah is pulling in the opposite direction. So the mind is going both ways. So eventually, somebody has to make up the mind. And where did the strength come? Strength came from Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said to Rupa, that don't worry about it. One day it will be sorted. It was just like Krishna's instruction. And it did get sorted one day. Rupa got the strength to pull together and come out of it. And when he came out of it, he arranged for Sanatana to escape, which you know the story of in the Chaitanya, how the money was arranged and everything. Sanatana also got escape. So both of them, in their letters to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, mentioned that if you don't give a shelter, we have no other shelter. We are finished in this life. That was how much humility they showed in their surrender to Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu knew who these two personalities, their background was, because after all, he is Krishna himself. So when he saw that due to some circumstances, this has happened like this. But seeing their humility and surrender, Mahaprabhu understood that they have understood the principle of Krishna consciousness. That humility what they exhibited, in spite of their high knowledge, high realizations, that humility what they showed to Mahaprabhu moved him. He could not reject them. He accepted them wholeheartedly. And he gave them the assurance that one day, by Krishna's grace, everything will happen in the proper way. This is what we say in the Bhagavatam also, exactly the same message. Vina mahal pada rajo bishegam. If you get the mercy from a great personality, that is what changes things in life. Nothing else. Remember, Rahugana was in the same situation. King Raghuvana, in the Jadabharata story, Raghuvana was very learned, had all the knowledge, like Prakashananda Saraswati was, has studied everything, all books were known to him, through and through he has mastered everything, but he had no realization. So he came to Bharata, Yogeshwara, Jadabharata. What did Jadabharata tell him? Raghuvanaina tapasana yadi na chejaya nirvapana grihadva na chandasa naiva jala agni suryo vina mahalpada rajo abhishegam. That you may have performed all penances in your life. Na chejaya nirvapana grihadva. That you performed all kinds of austerities and penances. And in spite of that, Jala, Agni, Surya, you have worshipped all the demigods in all possible ways. But, my dear Raghugana, things will only work when you receive the mercy of a great devotee. Vinam halpa the rajo abhishegam. That you take the dust from the feet of a devotee. And that taking the dust means to act properly in front of a great devotee. That's what it means. So not that, oh, I'll get a kilo of dust and put it on my head and everything will be alright. No, that's not what it means. Vinam halpada rajo abhishegam. That, in other words, Rupa and Sanatana did that so nicely that by their behavior they impressed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to such a degree that Mahaprabhu were fallen by that. And in one instance he told Jagdananda that I am purifying myself by embracing Sanatana's body, which was oozing with blood and all other things, you know. It was so dirty. And he says, I am purifying myself by embracing that. Krishna says in the same thing in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that I follow the devotees wherever they go. Yeah? That's what he says there. Anuvrajamyaham nityam puyeye tyangri renuhi. I take the dust from their feet for my own purification. This is how much Krishna cares for the devotee. So you can see what actually captivated Mahaprabhu was this behavior of Rupa and Sanatana in their seriousness and their surrender to him. And that pleased him so much. And that is what made him to elevate them to that level. And the mercy came. When the mercy came, everything changed. Rupa's life changed. Sanatana Goswami's life changed. And from without a penny, they went to Vrindavan and they built these temples there. And they wrote such books and established a system. And after 500 years, we are enjoying the fruits of that. So I think we'll stop there. All glory to you.
Just about. Just great in Adhyatma Prabhu ki.
Jaya Gopi Jana Radha.